Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Well, so I'm going to presume that you survived the government shutdown, or what was really just kind of a weekend off, which they usually take the weekends off anyway. But anyway, we've diverted that disaster, but there's always the looming disaster until they actually get this budget done. Anywho, as I said when I first started back in February last year, when they, and we can dissolve, disband the 12 unconstitutional executive departments and all the rest of the unconstitutional government, then I'll probably move on to something else instead of complaining about all of the tyranny that we're living under. But that hasn't happened. We're not getting close, and things aren't going to change because it seems like even the swamp is everywhere, or at least people are at least entrenched in the swamp water as they leave the swamp, because that smell is not washing off, my friends. Anywho, if you do not have a chance to listen to this entire show today, you can always listen to the rebroadcast right here on KSBN at 1 o'clock on Saturday and at 9 p.m. on Sunday. Got to get that straight. And if you want to dial in, the number to dial in to engage in this conversation, we're going to be talking about properties and all sorts of good things today, because I talked about it last week and I just breezed over it because I had Tim Benn in as a guest and I wanted to kind of help him focus on the many, you know, piles of data and the many things he wanted to get out into the conversation last week. So anyway, the number to dial in for is 844-320-4299. And I will do my best to try to repeat that as we go to break and we come back from break and so forth. So if I don't, please dial in and remind me, hey, you forgot to tell us what that number is. Anyway, this is an educational show, and the intent of the show is to basically teach you about our Constitution, teach you about republicanism, little r republicanism, the type of government that we're supposed to be living in and within and under, and what it's going to take for us to reclaim the Republic, thus the name of the show, and how Republic Review is an integral part of that process. So to stay abreast with all of the different content and all of the information that I'm putting into this, you really have to go back and listen to all these different podcasts regarding terms that you may never heard of, Platonists and so forth, so that you can understand them in context to the dialogue. And that way you will be completely informed and you'll understand what it takes to help assist in reclaiming the Republic. And you can download these podcasts from the ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website, and it's on the podcast page. Actually, I have two pages now. I have an archives, and I have the KSBN. And starting next month, actually, just a little over a couple of weeks, actually, next week, I am starting my Red State Talk radio show on RedStateTalkRadio.com, and that's Monday through Friday, and that's from 3 a.m. to 4 a.m., and I will still be broadcasting here on Wednesdays from 4 to 5. So on Wednesday, you'll get 2 hours of me if you're doing the streaming from Red State Talk Radio and you jump over to KSBN.net and listen that way. That way you can get both 2 hours of all unique content and intellectual property right here over the internet or over your airwaves for just the KSBN listeners. Anyway, the Republican Coffee Club is meeting this week and they have a new location. It is at the Something Else Deli, and that's at 152 South Sherman, and I will update the website. I just got this information today from Rob Chase. And anyway, this Friday, they're going to have Lieutenant Don Hopper, the custodian, and I don't think he's a facility custodian. I think they call the keepers of the inmates there custodians, and he works at the county jail. So he can talk to you about the plight and the lack of housing for all the criminals and so forth. And I just believe we ought to start outsourcing our penal system to all these third world nations and put our problems there and incarcerate them there and let people visit via Skype and so forth. They just go into the county, you know, office and they Skype and connect via, you know, secure comms and done. Then we don't have to worry if they escape, then they're out on the streets in Cambodia, China, Africa, or somewhere else, and they will probably stick out like a sore thumb. Anyway, what I want to do is I want to get into a lot of topics, but I wanted to focus a little bit more on some of the myths of how we've been kind of duped, because there's lots of people that find that that whole Christmas manipulation and how we kind of generated what the world knows as Christmas in right here in America and how it's kind of just spread. I mean, because there's been lots of nations that kind of contributed their little, you know, their traditions, but the American tradition in making it a, you know, gift giving and the, you know, the capitalistic side of it, is what the whole, or I should say the whole economic side is just, they just love that. The fact that we spend so much money on Christmas. And so that little bit of manipulation was for a good reason, because it was supposedly centering us on Christ, but it ended up becoming a reason of serving mammon and serving, you know, the retailers and so forth, and going and buying Christmas decorations and all that. So like I talked about for the Christmas show, there are lots of little things that we have been taught that aren't necessarily true. And some of those things, like I said, I think last week and for the past 2 weeks, I've talked about republicanism. And so I just want to follow up on how the press and the elitists have basically manipulated us, not just for Christmas, but for lots of other things. And again, on republicanism, if you understand republicanism, the Constitution never gave the Supreme Court, and show me in the Constitution where the Supreme Court is the ultimate arbiter over what's constitutional, what isn't constitutional. You won't find it. The fact is the states in Article 5 are the final arbiters to determine whether they're going to delegate any new powers to the federal government. And the states have that final say, and it requires 3/4 of the states. In the Articles of Confederation, it required 100%. All of the states had to basically agree that they were going to give this power, surrender this power to, at that time, the general government, to the federal government, which was Continental Congress. And so they kind of lightened the load a little bit and said, okay, well, 3/4 of the state. And so with the little R republicanism in Congress, they actually broke up legislative bodies. And I've covered this before, that the Connecticut Compromise, what Roger Sherman introduced in the 1787 Constitutional Convention, was recognizing the states as a sovereign. This was a novel concept. I mean, this was a very unique innovation in recognizing that the states were sovereign bodies and the people were sovereign bodies. And the framers just embraced this because they understood the dangers of democracy and giving people the ability to vote with 50% plus one is always a disaster. It was what caused the French Revolution. It's constantly the cause of revolutions around the world. And by creating a separation of sovereignties from the people and the states, it created this balance in keeping each party in check so that we didn't have mob rule. So the question I have is, why is every state in the Union, except for Nebraska, have two bodies in their legislative bodies? In other words, they're bicameral legislative bodies. Most people don't understand. Why does Washington State and California and all the rest of these states have bicameral legislative bodies? They have a House of Representatives, just like the U.S. government, and they have a Senate. If you look at how these people are elected, they're all just representatives of the people. Why don't we have a unicameral or a single body? What's the point in having senators? Because they're only representatives of the people. Well, that whole republicanism got lost because back in the old days, those senators were actually appointed, and their job was to ensure that they were taking care of and representing their county. And it was the same thing with the representatives. That is why in the Constitution, there's a limit to how many states senators you have. It's only two, and all states were equal. And so the legislative bodies in the states were supposed to be the same way. And it's the same thing with representatives. There was a minimum of representation for the counties. And so I'll get more into this as soon as we get back from the break. As you can tell, we've got the hard break coming up. And so I'm going to kind of grind this a little bit more, and then we'll move forward. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these messages. Okay, we're back. I'm back. You're still driving. And I want to close on these little thoughts of Republicanism, bicameral legislation, and so forth. And so these counties are the ones that are supposed to be represented in the legislative bodies, just like it's the states that are represented both in the House and the Senate, because Wyoming is guaranteed one representative. And each county in every state should be guaranteed some representative. But currently, in most of the states, you have several counties that are the very rural areas of the states. In California, I think you have 10 counties that are represented by one representative. You can't tell me that that's a representative government. And you can understand that 10 counties can have some very diverse interests. And so who gets the priority in their representation in that legislative body? And if you understand the legislation that's coming out of these progressive democracy cesspools, such as Washington, California, and so forth, you can understand that we are living under democratic tyranny, because the population centers are dictating and they're controlling us. That's why the Hearst decision and some of these property rights decisions that are boding bad against those of us over here with property are being rammed down our throats, because they have the control and they can dictate in California from their population centers how they can treat the rural area. That has never been the design of these states, and that was in direct conflict of the framers' mind model of creating a Republican form of government. And I've been having this conversation with several people, and I'm going to be working on a bullet list, you know, with the case precedents and so forth, because this is a political issue, folks. And because it's a political issue, the Supreme Court has no jurisdiction over it, that Congress should be the one saving us. So I believe that every representative of these rural counties that are in Washington, California, Oregon, and these other progressive states should all be complaining and calling upon Congress to enforce the guarantee clause of the Constitution that every state be Republican in form and not Democratic in form, and let them dictate how to do that and force the states to get back into little R republicanism and away from democracy, because it's not boding well, and we're losing more and more of our rights, and it's not going to get better until Congress finally does their job to fix this. Anyway, back on to the little rant I wanted to talk about. The states actually have the final say over what's constitutional, what isn't constitutional. And in the state governments, it literally should be the counties that are dictating that instead of a mob-ruled democracy. So when people look at this SCOTUS role as a final arbiter, their role really is only an arbiter when there's a conflict between the states and when there's a conflict between the U.S. government and other governments and that type of thing. So, I mean, if you read the Judiciary Act, SCOTUS doesn't have the jurisdiction of dictating whether you can be taxed for growing wheat by removing yourself from the wheat consumption of interstate commerce and so forth, like Wicker v. Filburn. Those were far overreaches by the federal government. And so SCOTUS has definitely encroached upon the states' rights. And to keep this into context, the 14th Amendment actually was applied, and it kind of, what it did was it took the Bill of Rights and the individual privileges and individual immunities within the Bill of Rights and applied them to the states. So if you have the right of assembly as an individual, then you have this right that's protected by the Constitution within the state, that the states cannot create laws to take away these immunities and privileges guaranteed by the Constitution and guaranteed by the Bill of Rights. However, the 14th Amendment did not apply all of the Bill of Rights, and I'll give you an example. One portion of the First Amendment, which is the Establishment Clause, is not protected, and the federal government doesn't have jurisdiction over the states on that because that is not an individual immunity or privilege. The reason the 14th Amendment was passed was to protect the individual privileges and immunities of the freemen after the Civil War. You understand that there were some exigencies at the time because these freedmen and the former slaves who are now freemen were literally being harassed, being oppressed, being arrested for trying to stand up and assert that they have individual rights. Because at the time, the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states. So the 14th Amendment, Article or Section 1 of the 14th Amendment, the last half of it, literally applied the Bill of Rights, the privileges or the individual privileges and immunities in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution to the states. So the states had to then start abiding by, and that's why every state, and there's been cases where people have had their, you know, restriction of religious freedom, or I should say religious freedom, religious expression, and restrictions on their speech, assembly, and those types of things. States aren't scared because the federal government will come in if they catch you passing laws and violating those individual privileges and immunities, that they will be slapped by the federal government saying, hey, you can't do that, and either fined or what have you. So if you understand that the Establishment Clause was the ability for the federal government to create a national church, the states actually had their own state churches. Every single colony had its own state church. The 14th Amendment was passed, and there were still several states that had established state churches. The federal government didn't go after those states for having established state churches. They went after the South, where they were harassing freemen who were restricting the individual privileges and immunities. They weren't rounding up ministers and the state leadership for having these state churches. So if you understand that the state still had the ability and the constitutional right to establish their own churches. And so as you look at the churches, and they slowly became, or I should say the states, and started putting the churches to the side and becoming what people today call secular, what they were actually doing was becoming non-denominational, so that the state wasn't necessarily paying taxes to one particular denomination of Christianity. The Constitution guarantees, one, the right of conscience and religious expression. It does not guarantee the freedom of all religions, and states have had and have historically had bans on religions for quite a while, and keeping them from being able to openly practice, such as building synagogues. I think Massachusetts, until the 1830s, didn't allow the Jews to openly practice their faith or even have synagogues. They had to do it in the privacy of their home. They did not have the ability to religiously practice out in public. That was, you know, the ban on the Jews, but it wasn't just the Jews. The Jews, Buddhism, Hinduism, Jainism, Sikhism, Taoism, Muslims, and even they had bans on Satanism, humanism, Luciferism, and witchcraft, and all that type of stuff. And to make sure you understand this, this Satanism, humanism, Luciferism, and witchcraft is akin to modern day secularism. In other words, secularism is anti-Christian, And it is the embodiment of the Antichrist, because if you look at secularism today, it is going after and focusing its laser, you know, eyes on the Christian churches and going after them. At least that's what it was before Trump. National secularism, in essence, is a national church, and it is violating the establishment cause. And SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, the Department of Justice, and all enforcement agencies at the federal level, and even some state and local municipality enforcement agencies that are enforcing secularist commandments. Because what are commandments? Commandments are laws. And so these secular laws that are being passed down by the federal government are being enforced. You can't tell me that's not a church. It's like the Spanish Inquisition. And so we're at a hard break, and we'll be right back after this, and I will give you some more meat to chew on as you're driving home. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Well, so we're back, and I wanted to kind of do a tie into that last commercial, because I was just talking with the station manager, and over the break, over the Christmas break, I actually broke my tooth, and I ended up going to Dr. Tracy and having him fix that, and he did such, I mean, I've never had such good work done. It took about an hour or so, but he made that broken tooth look just like the real tooth. I was just so impressed. I've never seen that kind of quality of work. So I figured I would share that. I shared that with him. Figured I'll just share that with you. So let me move on. So just to be clear, SCOTUS and the DOJ, FBI, all of these enforcement agencies at the federal level and some of the states are actually doing this as well. And they're grabbing this because they're completely lock, stock, barrel in line with the progressive movement. And understandably so, they are following these commandments that are coming down from the president and Congress because they're the lawmakers and they're the ones that are injecting these commandments of doctrine. And you can't tell me that these things aren't doctrine. As a matter of fact, here's a couple of examples for you. In dictating in the educational curriculum alone, they're teaching evolution exclusive from intelligent design and all of these other concepts. And there's been more proof to prove that we didn't evolve. And there is more proof to prove that there, you know, where did this software of genomes and DNA come from? There is no way the Miller-Ulray experiment back in the 50s, where they were able to prove that they could create the protein glue. But where did the software come from? These DNA strands of intelligence that creates life itself and all these different forms of life and even genomes, which is even a different type of software that creates plants. There's just no way. And so exclusively, we've proven scientifically that there's just no way we could have evolved without some type of injection of intelligence. And so they still maintain this monopoly and narrative within the education system. They also teach the antithesis of morals from the alternative lifestyle. They try to teach the ethics side instead of the moral side. They also teach remakeup or redefining families and so forth in these alternate lifestyles. And is that not doctrine? That's the antithesis of Christian doctrine or the Judeo-Christian doctrine. And so because they're enforcing those things and ramming those down our throat, you can't tell me that that's not the same thing as a religious injection in society. And it's coming from our government, who's not supposed to have a establishment of religion. Show me in the Constitution, by the way, where the United States or the states themselves have delegated the power to the federal government to dictate what's to be a curriculum, common core, standards, or anything. There's no amendment. The states never gave that, and it was an injection in 1953 under Eisenhower as a leftover from Truman. Eisenhower signed it when he came into office, and we've been basically subjugated by what I would call the welfare, the healthcare, and the educational industrial complexes. Most people understood Eisenhower when he said, let's be warned about the military industrial complex. But if you compare the amount of money in healthcare, welfare, and education, it overshadows what we spend on the military and in sciences and so forth. I mean, it's just that was the bigger monster that nobody was even watching. And if you look at it today, you can't tell me the Obamacare and those things alone will collapse our system. The military industrial complex, yeah, okay, nothing compared to those three entities right there. And they are crossing the line. They're encroachments of states' rights and powers. Forcing the opening of bathrooms for self-identifiers from the Department of Education was a presidential edict. Congress didn't say that that was supposed to happen. That came from the president and down through the Department of Education. And again, those are the commandments and the enforcers, because if you don't do this, what were they going to do? They were going to take your funding. They were going to hurt you and force you into submission. So as we move into the look-sees into what these elitists and the progressive media has kind of manipulated us, we have, you know, kind of gone down this path of looking at what is our property. And that's why last week I went through the James Madison property rights, and it really needs to be read by everyone. As a matter of fact, I want to reread it again tonight, but before I do, I want to do a little bit more ranting. But if you understand property, it has nothing to do with real estate. It has nothing to do with that thing in your hand, like the steering wheel in your car. Yeah, you have a title for that, but there are these intangible titles that you have that I, as I read last week, I go, this is so powerful. I need to read this in its entirety. And so I hope I have enough time. But again, I kind of want to rant because this I want to be solution-based. So what do we do? What do we do with the fact that this Agenda 21, 2030, whatever you want to call it, these central planners are dictating and taking away our property rights by our water, our mineral rights have already been taken from us, the rights and stuff to our land to be able to grow food, and dictating that you can't have victory gardens. Those things are already propagated in other states, and they're growing legs, and they're coming here because that's exactly what we have coming from Olympia. And so what do? We already know that there are businesses who are investing in, and these are globalist businesses that are investing in these planner organizations in setting policies and so forth. And I've mentioned this before. I think back in the summertime, I kind of exposed the Soros Foundation. I think it's the Open Societies Foundation. And if you go through there, and I think I even had the link out there, if you go and look at the partnerships that Soros has, guess who his buddies are who are working to take away our property rights? Gates, the Gates Foundation, Ford, the Ford Foundation, Rockefellers in multiple different forms, the Carnegies, and many more billionaires are throwing lots of money in supporting these lobbyists. And I don't want to call them lobbyists because these are central planners that are working right here in Spokane with the city council and trying to get them to pass and taking grants for doing these road diets, for injecting these policies on the Hearst decision or injecting water control legislation in California. It's not a coincidence that this is happening everywhere. These central planners are everywhere working on the same agenda in trying to slowly whittle away your property rights. Pretty soon, you're only going to be able to own one car. Just like in the old days under FDR, when he moved forward and put the Constitution aside and used tyranny, he basically started dictating how much butter you could buy and how much food you could buy because he had this great exigency and problem called the war. And, oh, we had to feed the soldiers, so all the good meat was going overseas. I don't know. I mean, I know that the soldiers were fed, but if you saw some of the stuff that they were eating, were we that poor of a nation that, you know, they had to take meat and all of that good stuff away where people were eating horses? Or maybe FDR was maybe providing that to communists and so forth, because there is plenty of evidence to prove that he was very chummy with the communists. And I would say if you go and look at the declassification of the Verona Project, that might actually help you kind of understand, you know, just how chummy he he was. But bottom line is that our only hope in all of these communities across America is that we start focusing and putting pressure on local businesses and your like-minded neighbors in stopping this insanity of being politically correct and surrendering your voice of being an American. We have over 37,000 companies in Spokane County alone. And you can't tell me that all of these are struggling and barely making money. As a matter of fact, there's probably lots of them that tout their patriotism, but they don't lift a finger to help combat this anti-American movement known as the Antifa, the Resist movement, and all of these things that are well alive, alive and well here in Spokane and working with your Spokane City Council, the Democrats, progressives, and so forth. And you can't tell me that these other companies would just rather let those guys win and take away all of our rights and start picking and choosing which businesses can survive and which businesses will go away. Because under Obama's administration, they did that to car dealerships. If you remember, they actually cherry-picked certain businesses that were loyalists and contributors, and the ones that weren't, they got rid of them. And in areas where they couldn't cherry-pick, they just basically kind of just, you know, drew straws. But across the nation, many car dealerships were shut down. And so this is all behind this guise of political correctness, and many businesses have been lured under this, and I'll use the word, there's probably a better word, but I'll just call it a parasitical organization called marketing firms. And this is a huge problem because these marketing firms are actually stifling our voices, and that music's going to stifle my voice for a minute, or actually 4 minutes, because we have to go to a break. And so I apologize that I'm being interrupted again, but these guys are what's paying for this, and we need this support. We need businesses to support this type of information. Is really a contract. Okay, so we are back. And I was just talking before the break about the stifling of our voices and the political correctness that is basically gagging us. That is the surrendering of presenting the contrary argument that the progressives are slowly and surely getting away with. And they're winning this war of information, and we've got to stop it. Businesses locally have to start standing up. And as a matter of fact, I'll just quote the great Edmund Burke, who said, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." Well, that was way back then. And it was not a misogynist world. But it was a man's world. And we've been going through a misandry revolution since the progressives took over and basically trying to effeminize our nation and all men. And so you look that up, misandry, because most people know misogynist, but they don't know the opposite of that, or the hate spew towards women, or I should say towards men, and that's misandry. Anyway, it's not just for good men. Today, it's for good men, good women, and good businesses. All people have to start standing up and start basically saying, we support individual liberty and individual sovereignty. I'm not here to tell businesses that they have to become party supporters. They should be supporting the most constitutional candidates out there. I'm not in favor of giving any party a monopoly, especially if they don't necessarily deserve it. I would like to see a party say, you know, our core platform is the Constitution and adhering to constitutional privileges at the national level. And our core priority is our state constitution and adhering to it and not allowing our elected officials or any of our party members in supporting legislation that is undermining the state constitution, our county laws, and so forth. We're a nation of laws. The rule of law must be and must dictate, And therefore, we need to start supporting those that are going to support the law itself. I mean, what do these elected officials do? The first thing they do before they can do anything is they raise their arm to the square and they take an oath. And in that oath, the very first thing all public officials have to state, except for judges, is that they will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. That's the first thing they have to say, folks. So why is it that they're getting away with undermining it? And so that's why businesses need to start actually working together with what I would consider real constitutional organizations, not necessarily a party, but a constitutional organization. And I've been trying, and I actually talked about this last summer, where I'm trying to do this, and I felt that the parties were going to come together and try to coalesce on the Constitution. The parties I mean is the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Republican Party. And I was really disappointed that the Republicans basically just wanted to move forward in supporting some candidates that were not even constitutional. These candidates were progressive, and they just didn't care. And any buddy that claims to be a Republican and claims to love the Constitution but supported progressives, I tell you, you've got a wolf in sheep's clothing. That's what you've got. And so businesses need to basically kind of hold back. I wouldn't necessarily contribute to the Republican Party, but I would start working together with like-minded businesses and like-minded constitutionalists. I'd be happy to help. And as a matter of fact, I am helping, and I am working with other constitutional grassroots organizations and trying to pull this together. But we have to get organized, and we need to start putting this focus on these businesses. So when you start walking into businesses and you see them, you know, with the Constitution on the wall or some type of patriotic, hey, we're real patriotic businesses here, I would challenge them on that and say, how are you, contributing? Because I've actually gone to a lot of these businesses that have these little patriotic, eye notes and eye candy and so forth on their walls and on doors and what have you, and they're not. That's just a marketing tool that they're using. And I believe that maybe the people are, but they're just scared because they have to be politically correct. And so they need to be convinced that all they're doing is they're surrendering our rights and our privileges and immunities by doing that, instead of standing up and being face on with the progressive onslaught of those people who are trying to take away our privileges, rights, and immunities. And if you understand that, then start actually having conversations with proprietors. When you walk into a store, go, hey, I noticed you've got a Constitution up there on the wall. I noticed you've got, some patriotic stuff here. Do you support? And if they don't, then you don't have to shop there anymore. You don't have to get their services anymore. We cannot continue to support people that claim and give us lip service, but they're not helping us fight this machine, because we are dealing with a machine. The Antifa is a machine. And guess who pays for it? You know who's paying for these folks that are just sitting around showing up at protests in the middle of the day? Well, there's a good chance that they're probably on welfare. So you're paying for it. Isn't that great? They're using your money to sit around and create havoc, throw rocks in businesses' windows, and so forth. And so I'm not going to name names today, but I am going to start. And I'm going to start letting you know that these advertising companies do not want to, get politically active. They don't care about what's going on politically because they think that's good business. And I'm telling you otherwise, because you can't tell me that not saying anything about these road diets that are killing these businesses, that is going to kill Monroe, that's, Crestline, that's killed those businesses over there. You can't tell me that that's about business or that's not about business. It is about business. And businesses have to step forward, or we're all going to suffer, because they're the ones that really have probably the most vested in this community, because they've created the capital, they've created the business and so forth. And for them to survive, and for them to survive in a climate that's business friendly, they need to ensure that we're supporting the free market, individual liberty, individual sovereignty, and bottom line, our Constitution. I personally only do businesses with patriots and lovers and those people that advertise with me. I'm telling you, they're patriots. I would highly recommend that if you need a remodel or you need a home built or you need a business remodel or business built, talk to Cameron Rippey at Rippey Homes. If you have dental work, go talk to your dentist. Next time you sit in the chair, ask that dentist of yours to say, do you support patriotic things? Because I'm telling you, Dr. Tracy does. And I would highly recommend you change your dentist and go to a great dentist because I'm telling you, he does great work and he really cares about the work he does. He may not really want a lot of new customers, but you know, he's taking that chance by supporting me. And I'm hoping that you will at least give him a shot because he is a true patriot in supporting this so that this information can actually reach your ears. Most of the companies in these 37,000 companies right here are hiding behind the 40 some odd marketing companies so that they don't have to get politically out there. And the sad thing is a lot of these companies are good companies that are very conservative and they, you know, they're listening to these people saying, yeah, you don't want to get too radical. I'm telling you that if you want to look at too radical, look at what the Antifa and the resist movement is doing and so forth. That's radical. And we have to stop that. And supporting the Constitution, as far as I'm concerned, has never been radical. And you can't be more American in doing that. And in supporting candidates that support the Constitution and supporting content that supports the Constitution and your individual rights and individual privileges. That's why I need that type of support. You need that type of support in our candidates. We have to start demanding that. And so, my friends, your silence is basically surrendering. And your voice as a business or as a person is absolutely un-American for you to surrender that. I think that we need to start taking pride in being Americans and being able to have diverse ideas and being able to stand up to what they want to say is politically correct. We can call it perverse. You can say that's a sin. You can do that because you have that right. It is endowed and it's inalienable. And we believe that here as a nation until they take it from us. And that is their goal, is to take away our inalienable rights because it's hate speech. Calling somebody a sinner, that's hate. You make them feel bad. And nobody wants to feel bad. Bottom line, we've got this war going on. This civil war started a long, long time ago. It started back in Adam and Eve's time. It actually started before Adam and Eve. I'm telling you that it's been going on and we're in the throes of a political war. And I'm hoping that as you listen to this, you may want to start learning the content of Republic Review and really understanding what it is we need to do to take back both our county, our state, and our republic. And with that, we'll be reclaiming the republic, and we'll be back next week. So thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week. Have a good one, and God bless.